Chapter 29. He says of you, I don't care a straw what he says of me. In such a situation, a boy in love will snatch at the most far-fetched reason, rather than face the mortifying fact that the lady may simply be tired of him. You don't quite understand Owen. Things go deep with him, and last long. It took him a long time to recover from his other unlucky love affair. He's romantic and extravagant. He can't live on the interest of his feelings. He worships Sophie and she seemed to be fond of him. If she's changed, it's been very sudden. And if they part like this, angrily and inarticulately, it will hurt him horribly, hurt his very soul. But that, as you say, is between the two. What concerns me is his associating you with their quarrel. Owen's like my own son. If you'd seen him when I first came here, you'd know why. We were like two prisoners who talked to each other by tapping on the wall. He's never forgotten it, nor one. Whether he breaks with Sophie, or whether they make it up, I can't let him think you had anything to do with it. She raised her eyes entreatingly to Darrow's, and read in them the forbearance of the man resigned to the discussion of non-existent problems. I'll do whatever you want me to, he said, but I don't yet know what it is. His smile seemed to charge her with inconsequence, and the prick to her pride made her continue, after all, it's not so unnatural that Owen, knowing you and Sophie to be almost strangers, should wonder what you were saying to each other when he saw you talking together. She felt a warning tremor as she spoke, as though some instinct deeper than reason surged up in defense of its treasure. But Darrow's face was unstirred save by the flit of his half-amused smile. Well, my dear Anne, couldn't you have told him? I, she faltered out through her blush. You seem to forget, one and all of you, the position you put me in when I came down here. Your appeal to me to see Owen through, your assurance to him that I would, Madame de Chantel's attempt to win me over, and most of all, my own sense of the fact you've just recalled to me. The importance, for both of us, that Owen should like me. It seemed to me that the first thing to do was to get as much light as I could on the whole situation, and the obvious way of doing it was to try to know Miss Viner better. Of course I've talked with her alone, I've talked with her as often as I could. I've tried my best to find out if you were right in encouraging Owen to marry her. She listened with a growing sense of reassurance, struggling to separate the abstract sense of his words from the persuasion in which his eyes and voice enveloped them. I do see, she murmured. You must see, also, that I could hardly say this to Owen without offending him still more, and perhaps increasing the breach between Miss Viner and himself. What sort of figure should I cut if I told him I'd been trying to find out if he'd made a proper choice? In any case, it's none of my business to offer an explanation of what she justly says doesn't need one. If she declines to speak, it's obviously on the ground that Owen's insinuations are absurd, and that surely pledges me to silence. Yes, yes. I see, Anna repeated. But I don't want you to explain anything to Owen. You haven't yet told me what you do want. She hesitated, conscious of the difficulty of justifying her request. Then, I want you to speak to Sophie, she said. Darrow broke into an incredulous laugh. Considering what my previous attempts have resulted in, she raised her eyes quickly. They haven't, at least, resulted in your liking her less, in your thinking less well of her than you've told me? She fancied he frowned a little. Wonder why you go back to that? I want to be sure I owe it to Owen. Won't you tell me the exact impression she's produced on you? I have told you I like Miss Viner. Do you still believe she's in love with Owen? There was nothing in our short talks to throw any particular light on that. You still believe, though, that there's no reason why he shouldn't marry her. Again he betrayed a restrained impatience. How can I answer that without knowing her reasons for breaking with him? That's just what I want you to find out from her. And why in the world should she tell me? Because, whatever grievances he has against Owen, She can certainly have none against me. She can't want to have Owen connect me in his mind with this wretched quarrel, and she must see that he will until he's convinced you've had no share in it. Darrow's elbow dropped from the mantelpiece, and he took a restless step or two across the room. Then he halted before her. Why can't you tell her this yourself? Don't you see? He eyed her intently, and she pressed on Colin. You must have guessed that Owen's jealous of you. Jealous of me? The blood flew up under his brown skin. Blind with it, what else would drive him to this folly? And I can't have her think me jealous too. I've said all I could, short of making her think so, and she's refused a word more to either of us. Our only chance now is that she should listen to you, that you should make her see the harm her silence may do. Darrow uttered a protesting exclamation. "'Tis all too preposterous what you suggest. I can't, at any rate, appeal to her on such a ground as that." Anna laid her hand on his arm. "Appeal to her on the ground that I'm almost Owen's mother, and that any estrangement between you and him would kill me. She knows what he is, she'll understand. Tell her to say anything, do anything, she wishes, but not to go away without speaking, not to leave that between us when she goes." She drew back a step and lifted her face to his, trying to look into his eyes more deeply than as he had ever looked. But before she could discern what they expressed, he had taken hold of her hands and bent his head to kiss them. "You will see her? You will see her?" she entreated. And he answered, "Colin, I'll do anything in the world you want me to." XXVI, Darrow waited alone in the sitting room. No place could have been more distasteful as the scene of the talk that lay before him, but he had acceded to Anna's suggestion that it would seem more natural for her to summon Sophie Viner than for him to go in search of her. As his troubled pacings carried him back and forth, a relentless hand seemed to be tearing away all the tender fibers of association that bound him to the peaceful room. Here, in this very place, he had drunk his deepest draughts of happiness, had had his lips at the fountainhead of its overflowing rivers. But now that source was poisoned, and he would taste no more of an untainted cup. For a moment he felt an actual physical anguish, then his nerves hardened for the coming struggle. He had no notion of what awaited him, but after the first instinctive recoil he had seen in a flash the urgent need of another word with Sophie Viner. He had been insincere in letting Anna think that he had consented to speak because she asked it. In reality, he had been feverishly casting about for the pretext as he had given him, and for some reason this trivial hypocrisy weighed on him more than all his heavy burden of deceit. At length he heard a step behind him, and Sophie Viner entered. When she saw him, she paused on the threshold and half drew back. "I was told that Mrs. Leith had sent for me." "Mrs. Leith did send for you. She'll be here presently. But I asked her to let me see you first." He spoke very gently, and there was no insincerity in his gentleness. He was profoundly moved by the change in the girl's appearance. At sight of him, as he had forced a smile, but it lit up her wretchedness like a candle flame held to a dead face. She made no reply, and Darrow went on, "Colin, you must understand my wanting to speak to you, after what I was told just now." She interposed, with a gesture of protest, "Colin, I'm not responsible for Owen's ravings." Of course he broke off, and they stood facing each other. She lifted a hand and pushed back her loose lock with a gesture that was burned into his memory. Then she looked about her, and dropped into the nearest chair. "Well, you've got what you wanted," she said. "What do you mean by what I wanted?" "My engagement's broken, you heard me say so." "Why do you say that's what I wanted?" "All I wished, from the beginning, was to advise you, to help you as best I could." "That's what you've done," she rejoined. "You have convinced me that it's best I shouldn't marry him." Darrow broke into a despairing laugh. "To the very moment when you'd convinced me to the contrary." "Had I?" Her smile flickered up. "Hell, I really believed it till you showed me. Warned me." "Warned you?" "That I'd be miserable if I married a man I didn't love." Don't you love him? She made no answer, and Darrow started up and walked away to the other end of the room. He stopped before the writing table, where his photograph, well-dressed, handsome, self-sufficient, the portrait of a man of the world, confident of his ability to deal adequately with the most delicate situations, offered its huge fatuity to his gaze. He turned back to her. "He's rather hard on Owen, isn't it, that you should have waited until now to tell him?" She reflected a moment before answering. "Told him as soon as I knew. Knew that you couldn't marry him? Knew that I could never live here with him." She looked about the room, as though the very walls must speak for her. For a moment Darrow continued to search her face perplexedly, then their eyes met in a long, disastrous gaze. "Yes," she said, and stood up. Below the window they heard Effie whistling for her dogs, and then, from the terrace, her mother calling her. "There that, for instance," Sophie Viner said. Darrow broke out, "Colin, it's I who ought to go." She kept her small pale smile. "How good would that do any of us now?" He covered his face with his hands. "Good God!" He groaned. "How could I tell?" "You couldn't tell. We neither of us could." She seemed to turn the problem over critically. "After all, it might have been you instead of me." He took another distracted turn about the room, and coming back to her, sat down in a chair at her side. A mocking hand seemed to dash the words from his lips. There was nothing on earth that he could say to her that wasn't foolish, or cruel, or contemptible. My dear," he began at last, "oughtn't you, at any rate, to try?" Her gaze grew grave. "Try to forget you?" He flushed to the forehead. "Meant, try to give Owen more time, to give him a chance. He's madly in love with you. All the good that's in him is in your hands." His stepmother felt that from the first. And she thought she believed, she thought I could make him happy. Would she think so now? Now. I don't say now. But later? Time modifies, rubs out. More quickly than you think, go away, but let him hope. I'm going to, we're going, he stumbled on the plural in a very few weeks. Going for a long time. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.